Now, you'll know him as a very famous cartoonist, but he's a cultural commentator and poet and an Australian philosopher and national treasure. Michael Lunig is going to be chatting at the Graphic Festival this coming weekend, and we've managed to get him on 2SER for a bit of a chat. Very good afternoon, Michael Lunig. Welcome to 2SER.
Thank you, Mick. Yeah.
Really great to talk to you. Look, your cartoons have been part of Australian culture for so long, and you've seen Australian culture just rise and up and down for the last, 40-50 years you've been a cartoonist. What are some of the key changes in culture that you've noticed over that time?
The first thing that comes to mind is the sheer velocity of things, the speed of the whole, just of life, and of it's getting faster and more sort of crowded, I guess. Yeah. And that has a huge impact, and of course all the digital world, etc. But it's been momentous, and it's been huge, the change. Yeah,
I remember when I was a kid, I used to see your cartoon books, pop up. And I was a huge fan of comics and cartoons, and I got given your book from my grandmother for it was my probably 12th or 13th birthday. And I fell in love with it. Like, I just really loved the simple drawings, but these strong messages that came through, I found they were so lovely and really made me open the eyes to what cartoons can be. Because before
I hear what you're saying, because I was kind of dissatisfied in my early days as a cartoonist about what cartoonists were, and I felt that they could be more than that, you see, and I suppose my particular struggle was to sort of be outside the loop a bit of cartooning, outside the conventions, and then having to live with not being fully understood, et cetera, you know. So I did sort of make my own way with it, in a sense. Yeah.
And you've got a bunch of characters that I guess have popped up over the years, but some have stopped appearing, such as Mr. Curly. What's happened to Mr. Curly?
Oh, I think he just wanders off, like me. He just wanders away. The great problem with being around for so long is you can lapse into just hammering the same old things, and I have a tendency to do that, not because I want to ram them down people's throat, but just because I love them. I enjoy to draw certain things, and they keep repeating, and that's helpful. And repetition is frowned upon in our culture, in the art world, I guess. But I sort of see its place. Mr. Curly is something I care about and don't want to overexpose Mr. Curly to the world. You have to have that belief in your own characters. That's almost delusional. You draw something and you're fond of it, and you don't want to harm it or see it damaged or something. Even what you surround it with has to be kind of friendly and things like that. So you're in this little dream world, imaginative dream world.
We grow attached.
You
I
make
understand.
A little environment for it. Mm.
That's lovely. A friend of mine was talking about the duck, of course, which seems to have been a lifelong companion of your cartoons as well. He wanted to ask what that duck represents to you. Is that some sort of representation of something or someone?
Look, in the first instance, I think it was just because I liked the symbol, and I was working for, on the editorial page of a daily newspaper, and all the news was so grim. It was the Vietnam War. It was, there's a lot of heavy, hard stuff in newspapers and media. And I thought, what this newspaper is missing is a little duck. It's as simple and as dumb as that. So you just put that in because, the good cheer of it, the naturalness, the creaturely quality. And so that is often the motivation behind artists, why they put things in their work, is because they like them and they think there's not enough of them, whatever that be. So that's how it started. But clearly the duck is a lovely, innocent sort of bird. Who doesn't like a duck, et cetera, et cetera. And it, it's really easy to draw as well. That helps.
Lovely. Yeah. I'll have to pass that on to him. Now, you've made many comments, political comments over the years, and especially some comments that you made, of course, a fair lot, like 10 years ago on the 9/11 tax and the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. And it puts you at odds with a lot of newspaper editors and political commentators at the time. Do you feel somewhat vindicated now by a lot of the things that have happened?
No, I think it's all too tragic.
Yeah.
And painful to feel any sense of vindication. I wasn't alone in that. Look, out there in the world, a lot of people were very disturbed and sad about that and objected and felt horrible. At the time, I was not alone. In the media, it wasn't like that. I was surprised the way the media in the newspapers sort of got behind and cheered it on. I thought that was rather disgraceful. But you see, that is the work of the cartoonist, to be the outside voice, the one who's not representing the well-armed and the well-resourced and the wealthy and the dominant. It's to represent the other side, and that is really traditional, for my mind, in cartooning. And sometimes that's a difficult position, but it was a natural position for me. I had sadness about, you know, all the death and destruction that was about to happen. Who would not? And I couldn't understand those who seemed to be cheering it on. That's all. Indeed. A fairly simple approach.
Yeah. But it speaks volumes, and I think it's very important to have that, and especially because cartoons can be so powerful and strike a chord at people, and who might not think of things in a certain way until they see that cartoon.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Now, of course, the everyone's talking about it because the US election is, of course, a week away. And there's been a lot of commentary about Mr. Trump, of course, and the fact that he's quite comical. He creates a lot of media around him. What do you think of this whole, you know, circus that Trump has created? And how do you think?
You know, we look into America. People who are not Americans look upon America with growing kind of bemusement and dismay and bewilderment, because it is just a bizarre culture in many respects. And in some ways, Trump is no surprise. It's been heading for that. I mean, Bush was a step towards Trump. And there's a point, I guess, everyone fears. There's great anxiety about what would happen were he the president. So it suddenly becomes, well, not suddenly, it has gradually become a great concern. When does America get to the point when it just has a nervous breakdown and goes, you know, berserk or something? I don't think that's a radical view. I think we've watched America become quite a peculiar culture. What Hollywood expresses, what comes out of that country, is quite bizarre. And all what is beautiful and good and truthful in that country seems to be a bit unseen and unheard. We are fascinated with America's weirdness and its bizarre, freakish qualities. And I think that's a very lopsided view, but alas, it's a powerful reality.
Indeed. It is. And it'll be interesting to see what happens a week from today, pretty much. Now, you are speaking at the Graphic Festival this weekend. It's in the Sydney Opera House. Fantastic. A free event. Tickets are very limited now. I think maybe they get some on the day, but it's on Saturday at 10:30 at the Opera House. Any clues as to what you might be talking about at this?
Well, look, it'll be an in-conversation event, and I'll be drawing somewhat on some sort of projected screen. So it will go where it will, and I think I'll be responding to people in the audience. Maybe the audience will be a lot of graphic people interested in graphics and art.
Yes.
But you know, what can I offer except what I learned? I didn't learn. I didn't go to an art school, and there's no way you can learn to be a cartoonist. You sort of teach yourself. So all I can offer is my personal experience, what I found to be true along the way in media, newspapers, and why I've chosen my course, my peculiarity. All cartoonists have their peculiarity in their work. I can just be autobiographical, I guess, and hope that that's of value and respond to whatever's there and sort of enjoy the fact of drawing and sometimes I forget that I'm basically a very humorous impulse. You know, I'm a humorist basically, but I've been cast into this philosophical, poetic thing, which is fine. But sometimes I've got to keep remembering I am a humorist, and it's a great wisdom in that spontaneous humour that people find, and particularly in these grim and worrying times, that there is this thing called humour. And I refer to good humour, what they call good humour. You know, it's like there's good money and bad money, and there's bad humour and there's good humour. So I do love this idea of, you know, a sort of a life-giving humour that brings us back to our humanity and our joy, you know. So that sounds a bit goody-goody, I know, but it's just an impulse, you know. Bring people together on the basis of humour is lovely.
It is, and it's a great way to bring people together, and I think it'll be a fantastic chat there at the Opera House. I think you're chatting with Ray Johnston, who we've had here in 2SER. She's a fantastic interviewer, and she'll be asking you lots of great questions, I think.
Oh, lovely, yeah. I like those events. They're good to, you know, the exchange between people, and it's a great spontaneity, and the truth comes out in spontaneity.
Well, that's right. Thank you so much for joining us here at 2SER this afternoon. We look forward to all of your future cartoons, and of course seeing you on Saturday as well. Thanks for coming to 2SER.
Thank you kindly, Mick. I've enjoyed talking to me. Good enough.
Cheers. That was the legendary Michael Luenig right there joining me. He'll be speaking on Saturday, as I was saying, at 10:30 a.m. at the Sydney Opera House. It's a free event. There are limited tickets perhaps on the day, but keep an eye on the graphic.sydneyoperahouse.com website for information on that one.